Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Akaya Bees. Oh, no, 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 guys. Please, please. Can we not do this thing? Can we not privatize energy? Can we not privatize power? There is just no ways. If power were to be privatized, more people would suffer because private sector does not care. They care about the bottom line. Not that government cares, but we would see price hikes like crazy. No, I mean, we're experiencing these things. We're experiencing these things, and the government just needs to, they need to fix issues, and that's it. You know, there needs to be accountability. That's it.
Thank you very much, Lwazi, for that voice note. We'd like to hear from you, Mkaya. What do you think about this? There is a suggestion that municipalities start moving towards procuring power from private businesses. And we were talking earlier on with Idil Nchabeling about the Electricity Regulation Amendment Act. He was pointing out to some issues there, and another listener and was saying she disagrees with Adil's view about the NTCSA, saying that it cannot stand alone. As Adil was saying that perhaps the thinking around the act should have allowed for some monopoly to be retained by Eskom, saying that perhaps he should explain a little bit more then about the integrated resource planning and how government can do that. If you have a view about this, how to go about it, Luz is saying, no, that should not be an option. You can reach out to us on 086-000-959. Our WhatsApp line is 063-688-0959. All right, and it's time now for Inside Your Business, how the banning of food sales in all school tuck shops will impact on local entrepreneurs. We are speaking to Bulelani Balabala, founder of Township Entrepreneurs Alliance. A very good evening to you, Ntate Balabala.
Good evening. How are you?
Well, thank you. So let's just talk about this. You and I have actually spoken about this, about how the playing field can be disproportionately, at least for local vendors, be adverse. So the reality is, government itself has been wanting in ensuring safety standards. Is this the resolution, though, to weed out the bad apples, to create some sort of stricture and regulation?
Sure. Norman, thank you so much for the platform and to all the listeners. I think just first and foremost, this is definitely not the ultimate solution. But also, you know, before anything, my deepest condolences to all the parents and anyone who's lost their loved one as a result of this. However, I think that the biggest thing, it all hinges at the end of the day in implementation, leadership, and the right type of intermediaries that you work with to be able to drive this on the ground. This is definitely not one of those resolutions or resolves where you as government isolate yourselves and then bring in your own stakeholders in a corner to then manage and execute on this. Because I think, number one, I think from a health and safety inspectorate perspective, go around and inspect all these businesses. So one of the biggest things that I definitely appreciate is the fact that there's now widespread awareness, because we would have seen over the years, you know, different news bulletins going out about a factory manufacturing counterfeit goods or fake products or mock products of the products that we originally know and we love. And these are obviously peddled and sold in the township because of the fact that, you know, the price sensitive market, and if the product is priced in a particular manner, we'll go out and we'll buy that product. So I don't just necessarily think that it's shutting down and re-registering these businesses, but I think it's a whole entire process of being able to look at that whole entire value chain in and around who's training, how do you train, before they actually get to a point where they are compliant and get a certificate of acceptance. What does that journey look like? Are they completely shut off, or is there an intermediary into an intermediate solution to that, where once they've done the training and they operate in and around those guys, being monitored by local affiliates and partners that each and every province and municipality will partner with as an extension of a supervisory eye. That's the only way I potentially believe you'd be able to roll out into the various parts and communities.
Mm. Before I go to penalties for non-compliance, I'd like to take tea as an example. You are going to have a summit on the 21st and the 22nd. I know it's not in response to this, where you are actually also going to recognize people who are notable for the kind of practices you'd like to imbue as tea. But when we look at the very processes that you are talking about, the certificate of acceptability acquisition, the process, municipal support programs, the fact that people must obtain key rights and permissions, and you know, also keep to the standard bylaws, some people come into the entrepreneurial space as a knee-jerk reaction, because they want to put food on the table. So those who are not members of your organization, then therein lies the loopholes for these bad actors to infiltrate your sector.
No, for sure. I think, obviously, any time you put requirements in place that allows an opportunity for those who can manipulate, recently those who are in it for the right reasons to be excluded. And as a result, looking at the COA map, we spoke to quite a few businesses, and that's one of the things that informed us putting together a basic handbook. Everyone is talking about hygiene, shutting down, but we've picked up that there was very minimal to almost no conversation around this is what you can now start to do and implement within your business. And you are right. Majority, I think staff at some point spoke to the fact that 60% of individuals that start businesses started as due to the fact that they can't get a job. So this is really to put food on the table. So that individual might not be able to venture as far out to understand what is the process of getting a COA. But however, it then becomes incumbent, I think, for an economic development department at various levels of government, whether national to provincial and also then local government, to be able to then have their hand firm on these type of things, so that we then move away from the vanity conversations and the vanity training that focus themselves solely on things that are trending, and then we need to then focus the real support to what is actually happening. So when you touch on, next week for instance, 23 and the 21 and the 22 of November, Thursday and Friday, we've got a summit, Township Economy Summit. One of the main things that we're unpacking there really is the exact same thing that has come up, with the poisoning, is to say, if you're an entrepreneur in this retail space, operating an outlet, selling at a shop, prepared food, pre-packed food and the sort, how then do you then package this business in the right way? How then do you, through information and training? And then over and above that, how then do you then access opportunities and market access so that you are able to then position this business in the right way, so that it moves from that 60% sustenance, sort of start to put bread on the table, and then you create a level of sustainability in and around it.
Some of the videos that we see, which are quite shocking, blow my mind, because and it's not just these people who have been identified as being the perpetrators. I think post COVID-19, people have relaxed their hygiene standards. And I'm talking here about the transporting, handling and storage of food. I think even in our own homes, we see people not doing that to a satisfactory level, where one is conscious of the fact that someone is going to consume that food, including the types of foods that don't stay well in terms of airborne diseases or exposure. How do you explain to people that while there are financial concerns, that your lack of adherence to it will lead to punitive measures, and they are fair in demanding that you keep to these standards?
So I think for me, and I love that question, I want to tell you, that's the best question I've been asked around this topic. And I'll tell you why, right? Whenever we need to develop solutions, aid, you know, or any form of reprimanding of business that have gone AWOL. The one main thing that we need to understand is that micro enterprises in any given case and sense are driven by two things. Not limited to all the many other things, but these are the two things. How does it save me money and how does it make me money? So part of positive orientation and education in the space and then training them and getting them to inculcate the culture and cleanliness is one, being able to highlight clearly what is the value add for your business from a monetary perspective in you doing the things that you need to do. And someone might sit there and think, but why do we need to do that? Why don't they just do it of their own? It's primarily because of what you opened up by saying now, the precursor to this conversation, to say that their primary focus is putting bread on the table. So at the end of the day, the thinking is, what is the quickest way to get to that other end? But the moment you're able to unpack to an individual to say, well, the moment your environment is clean, it attracts certain type of customers. Or the customer who comes there for one good might potentially buy 3-4 more and refer other people purely because of how you positioned your business. And you don't need to spend anything more than what you're already currently spending, but it's just best practices in terms of your housekeeping. That then makes the conversation palatable. It makes it measurable. But sometimes when we introduce new concepts and new things into any market, there's a level of apprehension because the immediate response from us as a human being is, what is this? At the moment, you make it palatable, and it's easier for adoption, and it's easy for you to then roll this thing out to everybody else. And it's also easy to have those very same business owners as ambassadors in their own business communities with other individuals that are operating within the same space, advocating indirectly for cleanliness as a direct driver to growing your sales and drawing in new consumers and new clientele.
Bulelani, thank you so much for speaking to us. Bulelani Balabala is a founder of Township Entrepreneurs Alliance, or T, the acronym as it's known, and he's part of this feature, Inside Your Business, talking about how the banning of food sales in all school tuck shops will impact on local entrepreneurs, but what they can do to better the situation themselves so that they still remain an active part of the economy. It is exactly 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. here on Kaya 959, on the streets, on the air. And if you would like to join us in conversation, please reach out to us. We're on the socials, on X at Kaya on air, using hashtag Kaya Biz. Our WhatsApp line is 063-688-0959.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.